How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez and Dave Meltzer here on Wrestling Observer Radio. It is Tuesday morning, August 3rd, 2010, here at figure4online.com/wrestlingobserver.com. Got some news to talk about today. We'll do some previews, and we'll talk about some mailbag questions as well. We got a bunch of those, so we'll get into a couple of those before we wrap the show up today. And Dave, how are you doing this evening?
I'm doing pretty good. How are you?
Not too bad. The Raw show was an acceptable program, but the show that really got me excited for an upcoming pay-per-view was actually the UFC Countdown special. I thought the Anderson Silva, Chael Sonnen stuff, I don't think it was like the best Countdown stuff they've ever done before, but I thought it was really good. I thought that Chael Sonnen, he threw out everything we've heard him say a million times. They got some decent quotes from Anderson Silva. They had Ed Soares playing the great heel manager that you wanted to see get beat up. I thought overall it was a great way to build up a fight that maybe, you know, a month ago wouldn't have looked quite as exciting as it looks going into the show this weekend.
Well, we had some people over tonight, and, you know, I mean, when it was over, everybody wanted to see that fight.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I really liked just a lot of the footage of Sonnen, you know. The story of Sonnen as a kid and promising his dad on his deathbed that he was going to win a world championship, and that's the only promise that he hasn't fulfilled to his dad. That was really good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Really, really good stuff. And, you know, Sonnen, you know, as far as, like, the quotes, I mean, I know all of them. The only, you know, the only thing that was kind of like a theme to me watching this whole thing was they kept showing those clips of Anderson, and he's just so freaking fast. And, you know, this could really crash on Sonnen. You know what I mean? They were really, you know.
Yeah.
I know how they're trying to sell it, you know, and the fact that Sonnen was able to take down Nathan Marquardt and Yushin Okami, and we saw how difficult taking down Okami was last night. So, you know, I mean, there is some impressiveness in Sonnen as far as his wrestling ability goes, and he may go and take Anderson down several times and may make a fight out of it. I just think in five rounds, there's going to come a time where Sonnen's going to get tired. You know, maybe Anderson will get tired. Who knows? But Sonnen will get tired. Just to stand for any length of time, he's going to get hammered.
Yeah, it was the show, of course, is coming Saturday night in Oakland. And the theme of it, I mean, as you mentioned, I mean, they tried to get Joe Rogan in there talking about how, you know, Chael Sonnen can win this fight, which, of course, you know, he can. I don't know if he will.
He can, you know, he can win. Stylistically, if this was a year ago and you asked me the type of fighter to beat Anderson Silva, I would say a really good wrestler who can keep taking him down. And Sonnen may be that guy. But, you know, I think Anderson's takedown defense has improved a lot. And it won't be easy, that's for sure.
No, and they did show a lot of clips of Silva destroying Damian Maia, and that was the other point of the deal, was that Damian Maia had said a couple of things to Anderson Silva that Silva had found disrespectful, but none of it was even in the same universe as the stuff that Chael Sonnen has been saying about Anderson Silva. And of course, on the conference call, when they asked Silva about it, he said that he thought it was funny, and, you know, he was laughing and that sort of thing, but, you know, I'm sure that some of it has gotten under his skin, and so the story was that he's going to go in there and he may try to badly humiliate and kill this man. And they showed footage of him doing it to Maia.
He may do that.
Yeah.
You know, it's Sonnen's going to have to be at his best. I mean, it was good they showed, you know, all that training footage of Sonnen, because they made it out like this guy is obsessed and has, you know, since he's been 4 years old or something, you know, he's been training every day to win a championship. And, you know, at first, you know, he categorized wrestling as the toughest sport in the world, and, like, the you know, the national champion in wrestling was the toughest guy in the world, in the country, and the gold medalist in wrestling in the Olympics was the toughest guy in the world. But now, you know, once, you know, he was in 2001 when he discovered MMA, he realized that, you know, no longer was the wrestler the toughest guy in the world. Now it was the MMA fighter, so he had to learn those other disciplines. You know, it was really well put together.
It is funny,
really,
when you
made. You know, I mean, Sonnen, I give the guy all the credit in the world. He made himself with this build up. If he goes in there and loses, a credible fight. I mean, look at Dan Hardy. Look at what a much bigger, how big a star Dan Hardy has become. And he lost five straight rounds to St. Pierre and never had a minute of offense. And you know, just because, you know, he got that buildup. And Marquardt's done, I mean, not Marquardt, Sonnen's done a better job by far than Hardy did. Hardy did a decent job, you know, even a good job, but Sonnen's obviously done a great job. So, you know, he can go and lose, but I think he still made himself a name. I mean, people now know who he is, and that's a big thing. I mean, and if he doesn't get humiliated, you know, if he loses like a decision, or even if he loses a great fight and gets stopped, you know, he still made himself a bigger name.
Funny you mention his training, because when he came on our show, he gave this big spiel about you know, guys that train full time and how nobody needs to train full time, because you know, you if you train 6 hours in the morning or 3 hours in the morning and 3 hours at night, that's 6 hours. And what are you doing for the other 18 hours of the day? He said. So,
well, the thing he said is that nobody, you know, he doesn't believe that anyone really should train more than 3 hours.
Yeah.
And you can work a job and train 3 hours, which, I mean, you can if you want to have no life. You know, I mean, I know guys, you know, I mean, as far as like training before fights and the way that they train and the amount of effort they put into the training, it would be, I would say, impossible to hold a real job and train. I mean, I think that your off-season training, yes, you can hold a real job. But, I mean, as far as the training in the last 6 weeks before a fight, you know, the idea that guys are doing that are too lazy to have a real job, you know, I don't buy it. And those guys aren't lazy. I mean, they're working harder than, you know, almost anyone.
I didn't see all of the Matt Hughes segment, but I did see the Roy Nelson segment with Junior Dos Santos. And I enjoyed that one as well. And they show the training of both guys. And Roy Nelson has built a gym in his home.
He turned his
dining room
into an exercise room.
Yeah, they've showed him there on the treadmill, and he's, you know, doing his jiu-jitsu, and he's swinging a rope, and that's where he trains. And meanwhile, Junior Dos Santos is out there training boxing and training with Antonio Nogueira. And obviously two very different men in a lot of different ways. But, you know, they played it up like, and everyone does, of course, but they played it up like Roy Nelson has got a chance to beat this guy. And, of course, Junior Dos Santos has just run through a who's who of guys in the heavyweight division. And as Dana announced last week in the giant special secret announcement, it will be a number one contenders match. So if Roy Nelson does, in fact, beat Junior Dos Santos and Brock Lesnar happens to win his fight with Velasquez, we could actually see Brock Lesnar and Roy Nelson in a battle for the heavyweight title.
Yeah, which I think would be pretty entertaining build-up.
Yes.
For that fight.
Yes, it would.
Yeah. I mean, realistically, if you look at all of the, you know, of the contenders, I'm talking about Lesnar, because Lesnar's a champion, but of all the contenders, Dos Santos really has the best resume of people that he's beat. I mean, you know, Gonzaga, you know, Verdum,
Krokop.
Not so much Struve, but Krokop.
Gonzaga.
Yeah, I said Gonzaga, you know, Gilbert Ivel. It's, you know, which isn't that big of a win, but, you know, it was a stand-up striking battle, which is the Gilbert Ivel style, and he beat Gilbert as his own game, the one game that Gilbert does do well. So, he's looked good. Nelson, you know he hits hard. You know, when you got a guy who hits hard, it's like I was watching those clips and, you know, thinking of, you know, Roy Nelson against Brock, and of course, you know, Brock will be a big, big favorite against Roy Nelson, and most likely will win. But, you know, I mean, Roy Nelson is a pretty good wrestler, not at Brock's level. Very good at jiu-jitsu, you know, much better than Brock in that sense. And he hits hard. You know, his stand-up is better, you know, as far as kickboxing game. It's a lot better than Brock's, you know. So, who knows?
There were some really good quotes in that segment there. We had Roy Nelson. He was talking about how, he said, it doesn't matter who's better at every aspect of the game. It matters who's the better fighter. And they even talked to Dos Santos' coach. And even Dos Santos' own coach said that he's got to be very careful that he is patient and he waits for his opportunity. And, You know, it is a good point that Roy Nelson has been fighting for a long, long time. He's a grizzled veteran, and obviously Dos Santos is. He's had a fair number of fights. He's beaten some guys, but he's still a very young guy. And, you know, even if he loses this fight here, I listen to what Nogueira says about him about, you know, here's a guy, he's young, he picked it up very quickly, he's already very good, and he gets up, he eats, he sleeps, and he trains, and that's all he does. And as long as he doesn't suffer some injuries or go nutty, I mean, you know, win or lose this fight in 2 or 3 years, that's going to be a scary dude.
Here he is, a scary dude.
He is a scary
dude.
Now.
I mean, anything can happen in a fight. Anyone can win, and one loss means nothing in UFC. It doesn't mean anything. Fans don't write you off after one loss, except on a few websites. And yeah, of course he can come back as long as he doesn't suffer. You know, but one of the things is some of these guys that have big win streaks. Not everyone, but some of them. When they lose, they go through a mental breakdown, and then it becomes a pattern. And, you know, a pattern of losses already, that's a completely different issue.
Let's jump into the Raw report here. This, of course, was taped last week. It was the second of two shows taped. And so there were some moments on the show where the crowd kind of was getting a little tired. We had the piped-in commentary. They redid it to make it a little bit more... up to date than, of course, it was last week. And kind of there were moments when I really noticed it. Like sometimes when they do those shows from Iraq and you could tell that like Cole and Lawler are in studio and they're not there in front of the live crowd. And, you know, I think when you're out there and you're watching it live and there's a lot of people in the building and you're doing commentary, I mean, you've got this natural excitement about you. And when you do the canned commentary later and you already know what went down, you've already seen it, you're trying to I guess, recreate that excitement that you had, sometimes it just, you can really tell that it's not working. And it wasn't throughout this whole show, but there were a couple of times on this show where I thought that it sort of hurt the show a little bit. But overall, very by-the-numbers show in terms of booking, setting up SummerSlam and the Nexus match and the Orton match. And overall, I thought it was a pretty solid show.
Yeah, I thought so. I really liked Jericho in the Cena match. I thought, you know, I was actually concentrating on what he was doing, and him and Randy Orton both actually tonight. They're really at a level above most of the guys on the show, in the sense that, and I'm talking about doing moves. I mean, but as far as, it's like in their minds, they're in a competitive sporting event, and a lot of other guys, in their minds, they're performing. And there's a big difference. I mean, just in facials and body language and everything, it's like these guys are so into their character. You know, it's real to them, if you know what I'm saying, or it's real to they're performing as if it's real, whereas the other guys, I mean, that is the goal to do it, but the other guys on the show, I mean, up and down, you know, did not, they're not at that level. I mean, you know, Edge was very good, I should say. I thought like Wade Barrett didn't do anything particularly wrong, but he did not look like a superstar to me in that match.
No.
It looked like he was just a guy. Whereas Sheamus, you know, is really coming on. I mean, he's you know, I mean, obviously he's a really good promo guy. But, you know, just, I mean, and then they had him run over Goldust. I mean, they didn't really take any chances or you know, do anything that would, you know, make him look weak. But, you know, I thought that they, you know, they pushed him real strong, and they should. He's, you know, he's in a key match. Orton and Miz was what it should be. Miz got enough offense in for sure, you know, to where he's in that league. But this was not his week to win. You know, it just isn't. And Orton beat him clean, and then, you know, Sheamus came in and you know, they acted like he would attack, but Sheamus backed off, which is probably what you should probably do is have the champion show a little bit of fear. You know, not run away like a girl, but you know what I mean. But just, you know, show that little bit of fear leading into the pay-per-view. I like that. The one thing, and I guess next week's show, being that next week's the go-home show, is that, that, you know, they're going to have to establish, you know, the team, because in theory, right now, it's only a five-man team because right now, you know,
as
Jericho
of this show,
and Edge are off the team.
Yeah, Jericho and Edge are gone.
Yeah, I expect they'll be back on next week. But yeah, you know, I guess maybe Brett will come in and recruit everyone and talk everyone into coming in, and you know, we'll see. We'll see what they do. I mean, if they who can they recruit? Who's out there?
Well, something will probably play into the main event of the show next week, which is Brett and Cena against Jericho and Edge, which is a weird match, and I guess something would have to happen there.
Well, Nexus is going to be there, and I figure Nexus attacks.
That's
and
right,
they all
Nexus
end up
Lumberjacks.
Nexus, and then they all come in as a team.
Yeah, that would be a good way to end the show. Would certainly make sense, and it would show that for the moment they're all, you know, solidified as a team, but there's still guys on there that are having issues, and a lot of ways they can go, just like there are a lot of the ways they can go in the actual match itself. And I guess to run down Raw, it did open up with a big promo with Edge coming out, and then Truth interrupted, and they had a back-and-forth deal about how they needed to be a team, and Edge, of course, is one of the guys that's on the fence, and I thought Truth did a great job here. I don't know why they don't give the guy more promo time. I think he's really good. And he tried to talk Edge into no longer thinking about himself, get his head out of his ass. They got to team up to take out this Nexus group. Edge wanted a match with Barrett by himself with no help. And the mystery GM ended up... Cole's back to wearing glasses, by the way. GM ended up signing it. And that was the first match. And like you talked about, I thought the... I thought it was like... It was all right. I think to me, when it was over, I mean, you had Edge and Barrett kind of having this even match. And then at the end, NXT, the Nexus guys ran in and Edge ran through the crowd. So there was no finish. Nothing was settled. And to me, I kind of was like, you know, you can kind of do this match with like Edge versus a Justin Gabriel, for example. But to me, Barrett should still be doing the role that Sheamus was doing on the show of going out and just killing dudes. Because he's like your centerpiece and he's a guy you don't really want to expose yet. And you don't need to expose him for a while. So
you got seven guys. And the deal is that hopefully out of all this, You know, I mean, when all is said and done, hopefully when all is said and done, one of these guys, you know, is going to be, in the championship picture. And obviously it's going to be Barrett. And yeah, you don't need to put him in a match where he doesn't look dominant.
He looked like just a guy in this match.
Yeah, that's what I thought, too.
And that's the same thing with
the Mark Henry match, in a sense, that was unfair, but... You know, in all of his matches, and I mean, it was the same thing when he was on NXT. It's, you know, he's good enough to where he's not an embarrassment, but he's by absolutely no means is he a main event worker by the standards of this company.
Oh God, no.
Yeah.
But I mean, at least in the Henry match, I mean, he beat the man. In this, it was just like they had an even match, and there was no finish to it, and so it was kind of a waste to have him in there of all people. It could have been, like I said, anybody. You could have put Skip Sheffield in there with Edge and had him go toe-to-toe and have a Nexus run in. It's just Barrett needs to be pushed as somebody special. And he being the guy out there having normal matches and looking like a normal guy is not helping his case right now.
Yeah, but he was, you know, but he wasn't pinned, so it's not the end of the world or anything.
Yes, yes.
But no, you're right. I mean, when I watched it, I mean, that was my feeling was that I don't know about Barrett as a headliner going forward. I mean, not that he's dead as it or anything, but it's like, but he didn't come off to me like, oh man, this guy's a headliner and he's, you know, and he's ready to take the next step. He seemed like a guy who was, you know, which was kind of what he is, a guy who's kind of over pushed to be a top guy, and you know, it's just kind of a situation of everything, but you know,
no,
the angle's there. I mean, no doubt the angle's been great for the most part since it started. But the guys, I mean, none of those guys have impressed me to where I think that when this thing runs its course, there isn't one of them. You know, Barrett will be somewhat of a star. But you know, none of them have impressed me to where they're going to be like a top guy. And aside from Barrett, I'm not sure. You know, I'm not sure that some of them might be being, you know, mailed to Tampa, you know, in a box pretty soon.
Well, it's the same thing that I've kind of been saying for a long time now, and that you need to take the guys that you really think are going to be something, whether it be like Barrett, Sheffield, Gabriel. I mean, maybe just those three.
I don't. You know, Sheffield's got a good body, but I don't see much. You know, if you put him in a singles match, I just think that he's going to get real exposed quickly.
Well, sure. This is my point. You take guys that have something, and these are the guys on the road that go out there for 15 minutes with Jericho and Edge and Cena in singles matches four nights a week. The other guys...
Yeah, you're right. You're right. Barrett should be doing that. Because right now on the singles thing, on the weekend shows, they were doing trios matches.
Yeah, you're not learning anything in those matches except how to do a trios match. And you're not headlining a pay-per-view for the title in a trios match.
Right.
And these guys that have little hope, your Otungas and your Darren Youngs or whoever, yeah, those guys can go out and have six-man matches where they only have to do a little bit of work, they're hidden, and you have a use for them there. But the guys that you think can be something as single stars, they need to work singles matches. Because if you can learn to do a singles match, a six-man is going to be easy. If all you do is work six-man matches, your singles matches are going to suck. So... Yeah. I don't know. I just see these house show lineups, and I'm thinking, wow, this is not how Brock Lesnar got very good very fast.
They're using the house show to follow the TV, but you're right. This is a unique situation. And the fact is that the house show is going to draw the exact same number of people no matter how you mix and match these guys.
Yes.
Because they're not advertising matches anyway. I mean, they are, but they don't do the matches they advertise, so you can mix them up. And you're right. I think that, but the thing is they're so into this flow of, you know, like the house show has to go 2 hours and whatever, 2 hours and 15 minutes, and you have to have the intermission, and you don't want anyone to go too long, and, you know, Barrett's being pushed as a top guy, so you don't want to put him, like, in a 15-minute match with Goldust. But that's probably, you know, the best thing for him is to do 15-minute matches with Goldust right now.
Sure. Edge backstage, quit the team, could take no more of Cena, and... After he quit, Jericho walked up, and Cena thought he was going to quit as well, but Jericho wants all of the glory, and so he challenged Cena to a match with the losing guy leaving the team. Cena said, "I don't want to do this," and Jericho basically talked him into it. Just basically said yes or no, and so Cena said, "Fine." That was signed for later on in the show. We had Morrison giving Kali a pep talk. It was goofy. He made a Magnificent Seven reference, and then... Kali mentioned the Seven Dwarves, which actually got a laugh in the audience. I don't even know why, but Nexus then walked up. It was actually just Otunga and who's the other guy?
Tarver. My
Tarver, that's right. Otunga and Tarver walked up and essentially told him that they didn't attack him because they did not attack people they respected, and they were trying to recruit him for their crew, and Otunga has started growing his hair out. He's lost a ton since NXT.
Ton of size. I'll tell you what, I mean, I remember all those weeks where we kept getting it shoved down our throat about how this guy has the it factor. He had no it factor at all. I mean, Tarver, of the two of them, by far had more than Otunga.
Tarver,
I mean,
Tarver,
you know,
can...
he, when those two guys were standing there and talking, Tarver blew him away, and you know, Otunga just... Yeah, you know the thing that he had going for him, he had a lot of confidence, I think, which I think he's lost, and that's always a big deal. And the other one is that, you know, he went from having the best, you know, like we said last week, went from having the best physique in the group to the worst. And when which is no big deal, but it is when your whole, the only thing you got going for you is your physique, and then now it looks completely normal, like anyone else in the company, like any prelim guy in the company, as opposed to looking, having like one of the best physiques in the company. All of a sudden, that one calling card you have, you don't have anymore.
Tarver can pull off being like a dangerous-looking guy, whereas, you know, maybe it's just because of all of the vignettes they did, but you look at Otunga, and it's like, here's a guy who he's been in Hollywood for a while, and he doesn't have I don't know. You look at the two guys, and it's like, which guy would be just like a... You know, if there were real trouble in the bar and you had to choose one of them, who would it be? And I think like 99% of people would choose Tarver. And
The thing is also Tarver's a good promo.
Yeah,
I mean he's nothing in the ring, but he's got kind of a nice look, but he delivers a good promo. And Otunga did deliver a fairly decent promo, but he's not anymore. I think in his mind, he thought he was going to be a big star. I think he had a lot of confidence, and he had the confidence beat out of him. And you know, when you're that green and you're in over your head and then you don't have confidence, that's, then you, you know, that, that becomes, then you start being scared that you're going to screw up. And I really see that in Otunga right now.
We had Gail, Natalia, and Eve against Jillian, Tamina, and Alicia Fox. Six-woman match, and ended up with, I guess, Alicia hit Natalia with the axe kick, pinned her. And then
does she always make that axe kick look so bad?
It's a move she should probably not be doing.
But, I mean, I always thought an axe kick, you know, that's not, you know, of all the moves in the world, I don't think that's the hardest one. As long as, like, the person that you're doing it to is stationary, which they always are, it's like she somehow never makes it look good.
Or she makes it look like she killed them, and maybe she did.
Yeah.
Yeah, she won.
I actually haven't said that. I thought that by the sliding scale of a WWE women's match, this was better than most.
It was, yes. And then afterwards, Alicia did a promo, talked about how she'd beaten all of them. It was the greatest reign in Divas Championship history. And as she's ranting, out comes Melina. She beat her up, of course, and laid her out. So I guess it's going to be Melina versus Alicia for the title, perhaps at SummerSlam in a buffer match. I don't know. We'll find out next week.
Probably. You know, the they called Melina, like, did they call her like a legend?
I hope not.
I believe they did. I believe that was, hold on, let me check my notes. I think that that was the word that was used. No, they called her one of the all-time greats.
Oh, yes, an all-time great.
Yeah.
Disagree, personally.
Well, I was like, man, the standards of all-time greats has fallen greatly.
Except for the Observer Hall of Fame, in which case it's been raised greatly. Just writing about that this week.
Yeah.
If the Observer Hall of Fame had the same standards as the WWE Hall of Fame, everybody in wrestling would be in.
Well, then everyone gets in.
Yeah.
I mean, all you have to do is be, you know, I mean, if Coco Ware gets in, pretty much who doesn't?
Sheamus and Goldust. Sheamus just killed him. It was very effective. And then he did this promo afterwards. The story of this, by the way, was that he had this match. He exhibited no fear of NXT running in, and they did not. And then he cut this promo talking about how he'd ended Triple H's career. He was going to do the same for Randy Orton. And he said the fans didn't give him the respect he deserved, but he did not need it because all he needed was his WWE title, fella. And it was good stuff. Very good. We had the loser leaves the team match with Jericho and Cena, and turned into a really good match. It was kind of slow going early, but really picked up there at the end. And the finish was pretty cool. It was Cena going for the FU. Jericho turned to the wall. Cena switched that into the STF, and he had not even locked it on when Jericho just tapped out. He just wanted out like a coward, slid out of the ring, kicked the step, started walking to the back. Cena did the big promo saying, listen, I don't want you to leave. I want you to stay. You really are the best in the world at what you do. We need a guy like you on this team. You can go toe-to-toe with anybody in the ring. And said he wasn't going to beg. It was all Jericho's choice. Jericho had that look on his face like he was thinking, you know, maybe I'm going to do the right thing here. But then he got the mean look, and he stormed off. And he is off the team for the time being. And that led to a segment in the back where Edge and Jericho got together and talked about how they respected each other for what they'd done tonight. Said Cena needed them more than they needed him. And ended up agreeing to let bygones be bygones. They shook hands. They hugged. And at that point, the GM announced it would be the Cena and Bret Hart against Jericho and Edge lumberjack match with Nexus as Lumberjacks for the show next week. And Jericho and Edge were none too happy about that.
I thought that Cena's promo was real good, and when he started talking, I was just like, please don't start with this Aquaman stuff.
And he didn't.
No Aquaman stuff.
No.
It was really good. I mean, like, if he's not given, you know, goofy lines, he can deliver, you know, obviously he can deliver a really hell of a promo. And, I thought it was the right promo for the moment he did. And, you know, and Jericho's a good actor, you know, good facials and everything. I mean, I thought it was a real strong. The whole segment was strong. I thought the match was very good. I thought the post-match was also very good.
Orton promo. Told Sheamus to watch the match and see what he's capable of doing to another man. Of course, it was going to be Orton versus Miz in the main event. We had Kali and DiBiase. And poor
Ted.
It was
at least short.
Ted just may as well have been gold dust here. He went in there. Kali beat him up. Put him in the head vice. That was the end of that. Maurice,
no, the other thing on Ted, when Ted DiBiase and Maurice came out, you talk about, like, you know, like when, you know, a couple looks like they're a couple. Okay, they don't.
No. They look like they are two people put together for an angle.
They look like they're together for an angle, and she looks like she's absolutely miserable being in this angle.
Mm-hmm.
Like I think in her mind, she probably... You know, actually, you know, it's better for her, but probably not with this guy. But I think that, you know, she probably thinks that she should be wrestling rather than just standing there dressed up, and just doesn't seem... She's, like, out there pouting, which doesn't make it any better. You know, it's not the right, you know... I mean, they look all wrong for each other.
And the angle here was that Nexus did not hit the ring, and so they were telling the truth about respecting Kali, and I guess we find out next week if Kali... goes with the WWE guys or the Nexus guys. Had a pre-tape with Mark Wahlberg, Will Ferrell, and the Bellas, where they fawned all over Ferrell, they blew off Wahlberg, and then Ferrell blew them off, so they wanted him even more. It was a preview for their upcoming movie, and didn't really make me want to see it, to be honest with you.
You know, Dwayne Johnson's in that movie,
uh-huh. And
then they didn't even mention that on a wrestling show.
Yep.
You know, you would think that
a lot of funny
you
things
might
in wrestling
just drop that hint. By the way, Dwayne Johnson's like, you know, the number three or four guy in the movie with Samuel L. Jackson. Just throw the names out there. I mean, most people kind of know who Samuel L. Jackson is, obviously. But instead, they did that skit.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting.
Yeah.
Orton and Miz had a match, and Miz did a promo. Beforehand, talking about Orton had committed a grievous crime last week by screwing him out of his attempt to win the title from Sheamus when Sheamus was out. And said the best case scenario for Randy was to beat Sheamus, but then Miz was going to be coming after him. And match was good. I was not as impressed as you were with Orton. He's very good at what he does, but he's also really slow. He's like, I know he smokes. I don't know if his cardio sucks. I don't know if he's just... I don't know. It's just he moves so slowly.
I think that's just the pace that he thinks works for him. But you know, he's still not right as a babyface. He's such a good heel, you know, as far as the way he works, and it doesn't translate as well as a babyface, even though you know people are with him. But even saying people are with him, they're not with him to the level they should be, given he was supposed to turn and be this giant thing, and he's not.
He's big, he's not gigantic.
Yeah.
So anyway, the finish was the RKO out of nowhere for the clean pin. Miz, there was a moment during this match, I don't know where it was, but I just remember watching it and I thought, you know, Miz is really fitting in just fine as a main eventer here, and I think that that's a very important thing, and hopefully a lot of people saw it like that. But this was a big match for him, and he did very well with it. And the clean finish doesn't matter because it was a competitive match. And then afterwards, Sheamus tried to hit the ring. Orton was on top of things, scared him off, and that was that. Like I said, decent by-the-numbers booking, good show. Nothing wrong with by-the-numbers booking, by the way. So I like this show. It was pretty good.
Yeah. I mean, I think the key is next week, you know, because I will say that it was fine, but, you know, like... I wasn't dying to see SummerSlam when it was over either. It wasn't like it was repulsing me, and it wasn't like it was like the TNA show that made me less want to see the show. But it didn't make me want to see it more.
Well, they've done those deals before where you've got a main event that you really want to see when it's announced, and after 4 weeks, I don't want to say you're repulsed. Sometimes you're probably repulsed by it.
Sometimes. I don't think anything's been a turnoff, but I'm just saying that I think that they need a really good show this coming Monday in Sacramento.
Yes. They're not building interest with each passing week. They're kind of.
I mean, it's not like you're going. Like, I mean, we're a week and a half. You know, well, not a week and a half. We're 13 days from SummerSlam, and it doesn't feel like we're 13 days from a mega show. I mean, by far, you know, it feels like this UFC show is just to me five times as big.
Well, it will probably end up being about five. Well, no, I shouldn't say
five. It won't
times.
Be five. But I mean, no. it just feels like that to me, you know, watching, you know, I mean, again, watching this thing and then watching Chael Sonnen, you know, there was nothing on this show and nobody on this show that was Chael Sonnen. You know, I mean, not even that make, you know, that was making you, you know, talking you into wanting to see a match or a show or anything like that. It didn't happen. But you know, again, like, you know, hopefully they, you know, they've got a really good go home angle. The one thing that surprised me on this also is the deal with Undertaker, because Undertaker, you know, I mean, we know he's going to be there. He's in all the ads, but they have yet to announce. Again, in this, you know, they have yet to announce, and on the show that's this Friday, I don't think that he's announced on this Friday show either, unless it's added later, which means that Undertaker may not be announced until the Friday before the Sunday, and to me, that's late, because a lot of people don't watch SmackDown, and I think that, like, something like, you know, Undertaker being back on the show, that it really should, you know, they really should have hit it on the SmackDown show that would have aired this coming Friday. So the Monday Raw, they can, you know, at least hit the idea, showed some clips and things like that, that Undertaker's return will be at SummerSlam. So, but then again, I guess maybe it could be added in a post-tape or something.
We've got the main event for the next ROH Internet pay-per-view. It's September 11th, New York, the Manhattan Center. It's going to be a match to determine who is the best tag team in the world, with the world's formerly greatest tag team, Shelton Benjamin and Charlie Haas, facing Chris Hero and Claudio Castagnoli. That is apparently the main event of the show, and should be a pretty damn good match if, we haven't seen a lot of Shelton and Charlie Haas lately, but hopefully it'll be a really good match. So,
any of Charlie Haas, and the only Shelton Benjamin stuff has been Puerto Rico.
Yeah.
You know, so, and he hasn't knocked him dead there.
But hopefully together they'll put on a hell of a... Well, and Hero and Castagnoli are awesome, so...
And the thing is that those guys, you know, both Haas and Benjamin, they know what's up with ROH.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like, you know, you go to Puerto Rico and there's no pressure on you to go out there and have that kind of a match. You know, it's just a different... It's
hence
a different
the long
vibe.
Success of Carlito on the island.
Yeah. So with you know, I mean, they know they're going to have to work really hard or they're not going to look good in ROH. Those are very... They're very demanding fans.
Especially in New York.
Yeah. You know what, though? I think those fans will probably really pop for Haas and Benjamin. But if they don't deliver, I think they'll also turn on him fast.
Yeah. TNA Thursday, it is the go-home show for the Hardcore Justice pay-per-view. And, you know, I know what they're doing with the Thursday show the week after this. It's like the show that was supposed to be the August pay-per-view. And I don't know. I find it so funny that, like, of all the companies in the world, TNA actually plans out in advance, you know, which WWE is obviously not doing. And you just watch this show, and it's astounding to think that they're planning things out in advance, and their plans are meticulous enough that they can't just push the August pay-per-view to September. No, they've got to get August done in August, and so we're getting this free show with five matches announced thus far that's going to be airing 4 days after a pay-per-view where they've only announced two matches at the go-home show. It's just
amazing. Yeah, I believe, unless plans change... I know that the plans were only to go in there with two matches announced for the pay-per-view. You know, the RVD and Jerry Lynn and Raven. And has RVD and Jerry... I guess it has been. And then, on the show, I heard Ric Flair and Jay Lethal is a spectacle that they expect will do a good quarter-hour rating, in the sense that Flair bleeds... I think Flair comes out in a suit for a street fight, which is what he used to. He used to come out in, like, tuxedos for street fights with Dusty Rhodes back in the 80s. So he comes out with a suit. He ends up with, you know, all of his clothes torn off, except he's in his underwear. I think he has one sock, one shoe, and bleeding all over the place. So I heard that was pretty entertaining or something. It was riveting. Machine Guns and Beer Money, which was Ultimate X, which I heard was a very good match. And... I think what else? Women's tag. I heard. I think it's Hamada and Taylor Wilde against Lacey Von Erich and Velvet Sky, which is the tag title change, which I heard was just god-awful. And who else was on the show? I don't remember off the top of my head.
Riveting.
Yeah.
So that's the show.
I heard much better than this week's show, which, you know.
So of all the weeks for Lance not to watch the show.
Yeah, he picked a good one, didn't he?
Well, I picked a good one for him.
Yeah. But you know what? I mean, I don't know that he would have liked any of the other weeks that much more either.
Yeah.
Although it was this one. The other one was RVD and Dreamer against Abyss and Raven.
That's right.
Which I heard, you know, does, you know, the end result of that match is that you probably don't want to see the ECW pay-per-view nearly as much.
Awesome. Oh, well, there you go. We talked about this a couple of weeks back when you predicted this would do a much bigger buy rate than your average TNA pay-per-view.
I gave you the advice, less is more. Don't expose it beforehand because it's all nostalgia.
You have to wait till the last week.
Yeah, and I mean, Dreamer in a hardcore match on television wasn't a good idea. Dreamer and Raven on opposite sides of a tag team match before their singles match. I mean, if they were going out there and they're going to have, like, really great spots with each other and makes you go, like, man, I can't wait to see them as single, you know, then it can work. But I heard that is not what happened.
Let's jump into the mailbag here for a couple of questions before we wrap it up here. This person says, in 2001, Meng won the hardcore title, but was not under contract to WCW at the time. A week later, he showed up at the Royal Rumble without dropping the belt. Did WWE sign Meng because they really wanted him, or was it just to annoy WCW by having one of their champions turn up on WWE TV without dropping the belt?
I don't remember. I'd have to look it up. It sounds like something that they would, you know, that they would do to just to get at WCW for their stupidity. But I don't remember that instance in particular. You know, those were the years that I blurred out of my mind because WCW was just so freaking awful.
I vaguely remember Haku showing up. I just vaguely remember it happening. It's also blocked a lot of that out of my mind.
Yeah.
Will having two pay-per-views, UFC pay-per-views in the same month, have an effect on the SummerSlam buy rate?
Historically, when I've gone through this, I don't think the Boston pay-per-view will have any effect at all. A pay-per-view that's done after seems to have no effect at all. A pay-per-view that's done the night before seems to hurt you about 10%. This one's done 8 days before. Usually that hurts a little bit. So I would say it will hurt a little bit, but not, you know, I mean, not you know, 3 to 5% at most.
Person says, why is WWE pushing the young new heels and burying the young new baby faces? You would think they would push the baby faces because they would draw money down the line, more money down the line. Well, they can always turn the heels baby face, and I don't know.
I think it's easier to introduce a new guy and get him over as a heel.
Yeah, because people when people see a new guy, they naturally don't want to like him because they don't know who he is. So, you know, it's easier when you're a heel, you're probably gonna get booed, so you may as well debut as a heel. And if you get over, you turn babyface.
Yeah. And maybe there's the feeling, and I don't think this actually exists, but maybe there's the feeling that people will resent, you know, a babyface being shoved down your throat, but if a heel shoved down your throat, it's heat.
This person here says, it appears this year's SummerSlam is drawing more interest than in years past. Is the Nexus Invasion angle live or die by the SummerSlam buy rate?
No, I think that the Nexus thing is going to go as long as they think it's going to go. And the deal is like one of the big problems is that they don't know the buy rate until several weeks after. So like if something completely flops, like in the old days, if you had some angle and you were building it, you know, towards this big house show, and then the house show goes and flops, the natural reaction is okay, you know, the public didn't buy this. Now let's go in a new direction. But with pay-per-view, because the numbers come so late, you're already, by the time you get these numbers, you're already committed, you know, to the next month already, so you can't really pull the plug as easily. So, but I mean, the point is, even if the show does a disappointing number, I don't think it's going to reflect negatively on anyone in particular, and they're not going to drop it. You know, they're not going to drop it soon or anything like that because of that. It's going to run its whatever its course is. It'll run, unless. So that's what I think.
Couple more here. This person says, why is Bret Hart being advertised in all these matches? Have you heard anything on WWE buying out his Lloyd's of London deal?
Yeah, I haven't heard that, but it would make sense that they did because he's, again, you know, that was the Lloyd's of London thing has been a big issue since he came back in January. And I don't know why he's, I guess we'll see this week. He's supposed to wrestle twice in Sacramento, which to me makes no sense at all. But he's doing a lot more wrestling than I thought he would, and we'll see. I mean, how much he does and if he takes any punishment at all. I mean, it worries me because his concussion issues are real, very 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 real, and they really ended his career. And you can book, especially like in a 7-on-7, you can book it. You don't have to do much with him. He can come in here, get a hot tag, do a few things, and all people want to see is the sharpshooter anyway, and that's enough. But in this tag, I'm presuming the match will probably be short, and Nexus is going to run in. But, if those guys go in there, they go and beat him down like they beat some of the other guys down. That could be a real bad deal.
Yeah. And finally, is there any chance of a WrestleMania being held in St. Louis? We have a strong wrestling background, a stadium that seats 65,000 plus, a large enough downtown and surrounding areas to accompany people from all over the world.
I'm trying to remember. They had the list of the different cities who bid, and I don't remember St. Louis being on that list. They may have been. But those are the cities that are being under consideration for the next 2 or 3 years. I mean, as far as somewhere down the line, a WrestleMania in St. Louis, I think that the feeling is the population base in St. Louis is a little bit on the small side. So it would be, I wouldn't say it's impossible, but I think that they like to go to, larger population-based areas. The one thing with, or a place like Indianapolis where it's not far from a lot of big markets. Chicago, the thing with Chicago is a great place, but they don't have, you have to run it indoors because you can't risk outdoors. I don't think they want to do an outdoor stadium in Chicago, but that place can be freezing. Detroit, obviously, you've got the Toronto market. That's why they've gone there a lot of times. The Northeast, you have the same thing. There's no dome stadiums in the Northeast, so you've got to rely on the arenas. That's where Houston gets a lot of it. But I haven't heard St. Louis being considered. But, yeah, it does have a great wrestling history, and that will work in its favor.
And that's going to do it for today, everybody. We've got a lot of stuff coming up on the website and a lot of shows coming up as well. Dave and I are going to be back actually Thursday night this week. And actually, that'll be about 5 straight days in a row. We'll have a show Thursday. We'll have a show Friday. The preview for the UFC event will both be down there for the show in Oakland. Of course, Saturday night after UFC, we'll have a Sunday night show after the TNA pay-per-view and then a Monday night show as well. So a bunch of shows all in a row. Tomorrow, we're going to be joined by David Lagana to talk the original ECW One Night Stand pay-per-view in 2005. Lance Storm, of course, is up on Thursday. Steve Sims is going to be coming up as well, a Brian and Vinny show, 2 newsletters coming up, and a bunch of other stuff. So anyway, no shortage of stuff coming up. Check out the front page for more, and we'll talk to you again after a while.